Yes, a lot. Well, I can remember here when, way back when I was a youngster going to school in Fayston, they had steam mills up there in Fayston. There was one up by the, what they call the battleground. There was one up in back of where, well, it's up back of where Mad River Barn is. Up in there was one, they called that the Pop Yowell Mill up in there. But they used to go, the stage used to go from Waitsfield. Henry Bettis used to run it. Fred Eaton and his and Mrs. Eaton run that stage for years. And Mrs. Eaton used to drive the horses to Middlesex. And they'd come back sometimes and they'd bring six or eight men at the time. And they'd take them off up to Fayston to work in the mills during the winter. And then in the spring of the year, there'd be a whole string of horses drawing the lumber to Middlesex on Travis sleds. Well, they did it all winter. They'd keep drawing it and take it to Middlesex, load on the cars to ship it out. Back at that time, I remember seeing those big loads of grain, of lumber go down through. And there was a bunch of men, they said they had three crews that worked up on the mountain. There was one crew working, one coming, and one going. Some of them would come up and stay a little while and they'd get out again. And they brought in a lot of the help came from down in Boston, as I remember at that time. They'd come to Middlesex on the train, then they'd get off there and some of them would start to walk up into the valley. And they'd come up here and work in the wintertime to the sawmills. Some of them would go up into the mountain, claim they were great teamsters, and they didn't even know to put the harness on a horse, say nothing about driving them.
Yeah, I guess there's a real skill to driving a team.
Yeah, well, I drove when I worked in Irish's father. We worked, drove horses in the woods. Then in the spring of the year, they had four good horses. They used to put them on the road machine and work the roads. I drove the four horses on the road machine to work all the roads in the spring of the year in Warren. Went all over the roads, and I'd do it again in the fall before the ground froze up.
Now, would they have to do that sort of to pay their taxes?
Well, some of it was done to pay the taxes, to help pay them, but they didn't get enough out of it to pay them, or to amount to much. I think that they got, at that time, they got, I think, about $3.50 a day for a man and one pair of horses. So they got about $7 a day for the man and two teams to run the road machine. And I worked for a fellow by the name of Sam Weber the first year. I drove the horses on the road machine, and a fellow by the name of Luke Colby run the machine. And Sam was the boss. He used to ride around with a little chestnut horse and his old buckboard, and sometimes he had a 2-gallon jug of cider under the seat.
About a mudslide.
The landslide up to Fayston?
Yeah.
It's too bad that now that it's so foggy up there, you can still see the scars of it. Now that came down, I'll tell you somebody that's got an article about that, and that is Reba Hall. Because I put up a holler because they want to open that slide-off basin over in here. You can't see it today on account of the fog up there. But they want to open that basin up for the ski business. And I tell them I should leave it alone, that is a historical part of the valley. You can still tell, the other two slides came down up there.
Well, tell me about that.
I don't know when, I don't remember when either one of them came down, but one of them came down quite a number of years before the other, as I remember, I've heard them tell. But my folks used to have pictures of the people that came from all over the state. And they went up to what they called the Mirandy Bettis place and hitched their horses up there, the trees, and then they'd walk up to see where the slide came down. A lot of them never did get up too far on the mountain, but they went up there and see it. And I think it was Elmer Mahiron's grandfather. I think that were down, there were two boys, two of them. I can't remember, one of them was Hollis Mahiron, and I forget what the other one's name was now. But they were down in the field hoeing potatoes when that happened. And they heard the roaring and they looked up and they took off and beat it for the house. Got up into the road when the wind down through, and they said some of their potatoes was all the way from up in Faiston clear down through the Middlesex, scattered in the fields. Potatoes was coming up all over the place that later in the year. But that came down, I think it was, I can't tell, but I think Reba Hall told me a year or so ago, I asked her about it, and she's read a note that she had on it, and I think it, this was a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, it was about 114 years old at that time. But there's a spot over there now where there's another slide that had started, but it's bigger now than it was a year ago. And then there's another one way over by Sugar Bush South. It looks to me as though there's some more of the land that slid down off from the ledges, a lot of bare ledge up there. I don't know what'll happen, but I hope they don't never develop it. It should be left alone. They've ruined the mountain. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the skiing business has ruined the Green Mountains, not only here in this valley, but a lot of other places in the state. If I had my way about it, I wouldn't allow them to cut another tree for the ski business. But
have they had more mudslides since the ski business? Or
No, I don't think they've done any.
I heard it, the story I heard about the mudslide was that there were, I don't know whether the name was Coda, a couple had gone to town, and when they came back, you know, they had 5 acres up there, and 4 of them were just under mud.
I think that was, I think that must have been the Bettises. The Miranda Bettis place. They were related to the Codas.
Okay, because it was Don Coda's grandfather.
I think probably someone of those. Yeah, but there was. I think that Charlie Bettis family lived up there at one time, and then they moved down and they lived where that little country store is there in Faiston. And I think that Charlie Bettis and their family moved down there. And Mary Bettis, as far as I know, she's still alive. I don't know. She and my oldest sister went to school together. It seems to me my sister told me this summer that she saw her not too long ago. And I know she might have seen her this summer down here to the alumni banquet. But I'm quite sure she told me that she saw her and had a long visit with her when she was here this summer.
Do you think she might be interested in talking with me, or...?
She might. I have no idea where she lives. I think her name is Fairbanks now.
Fairbanks.
Yeah. But I have no idea where she lives.
Mary Fairbanks?
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether she lives here in Vermont or whether she's moved away somewhere, but I think she was down here to the alumni banquet. I won't swear to it, but I think so. And she must be, 86, 87, 88, somewhere along in there. See, my oldest sister, somewhere near the same age. My sister was just 86 here last week.
Would your sister be a good person to talk with?
Who, Mary? Oh, I think so, yes,
would
I think so.
Would she mind?
I don't think so. I think she'd be glad to.
Great. You know. Now, your sister's name is?
Shirley Fuller. She lives down in Rhode Island.
And, does she still live in Rhode Island? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk with her on the telephone about every other week.
Does she ever come up?
Well, she was up this summer for a little while, but she don't come up very often. She'd like to come more often. She wanted to come up this fall for the foliage, but she isn't able to drive. She's fell 3-4 years ago and broke her hip, and they didn't do a good job putting it together the first time, so she had to go back a year ago, and nearly a year ago last, I don't know. It was.
Whereabouts in Rhode Island does she live?
She lives in Ashaway, Rhode Island.
Hathaway?
Ashaway.
Ashaway.
Yeah. That's what they call it. Chase Hill Road, Ashaway, Rhode Island. I don't know what the zip code is. I could find it for you.
I can find that. Do you have, while we're on the subject, do you have any other suggestions of people that would be good to talk with?
Well, the one other person in town here, that I think you would be, he'd be an awful interesting fellow to talk with, and that's Otis Wallace.
His name has been mentioned to me, yeah. No,
he and I are about the same age. I think he's a couple of years older now. I think he's 85. I think he told me, because his wife is quite bad. She has Alzheimer's disease, and now she's went in, and they're awfully afraid that they're going to have to amputate one of her legs. But she was down to Burlington, and they had the arteries in her legs all clotting up or something, hardening the arteries, so that they're awfully afraid that they may have to take one of her legs off, and her mind is very bad. And Otis has his hands full to look after and everything, but he does almighty well. I called him the other day. I heard that she already had her leg taken off, and I called him and asked him. No, he said that they had to replace, take out an artery somewhere else and put one in their leg to see if they could help the circulation. But he said it didn't look as though it was going to be pan out to be what they thought it would do. But she's got to go back. I think she's got to go back this week to see the doctor again. But he would be a good person to talk with.
When did the ski business really take off here?
Well, to start with, they started in with a rope tow up in back of Warren Village, way back in, I guess it must have been in about 39 or 40. They run that for a while. But the Mad River ski business came in here in 1945. And they had, the first year, I think they had quite a bit of snow. And then they got about 3 years in a row where they didn't have any snow. But in the spring of the year, that road was just a mud hole clear up through there. And through the people in the ski business was, well, if you really wanted to get somebody to talk to you in regard to the ski business and when it came in here, Henry Perkins, you've probably heard of him, he would be the one, because he, if that is providing he hasn't, he's getting away up in the years too pretty well, but he's been a pretty active person, and I think his mind is still pretty clear. And he lives, when you go up into Facing above the little country store, you go up to the, after you make the turn there by the mill, the sawmill, you go up the road there, and then there's some condominiums on the right hand, and then there's a road, the driveway goes up, I don't know what the sign there or not, but it's the old, I call Tucker Hill Road, because that road where we used to live was called Tucker Hill. And he lives in a big white house right on the right hand side, right on that, right at the foot of that road, just after you go off the main road there on Route 17. And I don't know what it is. He used to be out walking all the time, but his eyesight, he's pretty near blind. And he has to have somebody kind of lead him around when he goes down to the store and help get his groceries and things like that.
But he grew up here, did he?
No, he moved in here. He came up here with some of the first ones from the ski business, because I helped to rebuild the house that he had for a ski lodge. The fellow from Montpelier by the name of Paxman was out. He was a boss there. And Clayton Kingsbury and I went up there and worked and done helped do quite a lot of the work on the place there. But he was one of the first ones that came in here for the ski business. Then another one that came in here when the ski business first started was Alan Clark and his wife. And they had a place up there in Faison where my uncle used to live. And I give Alan Clark all the credit in the world. But most of them that started in when that ski business, a lot of them, they flunked out because everything went to pot. There was no snow and they didn't have any skiing. But Alan kept right on working. He went out and cut brush for the town and along the road. He said, I'd do anything to earn a dollar or two so I could earn buy a loaf or two of bread to feed my family. And he's worked like a cuss all his life. And he finally went into the carpenter business, and now him and his son are in it together. But he says they don't want me to go out and work on the job anymore. He says they want me to sit at the desk, he says, and do the paperwork. And he says, yeah, I don't like that. But he goes out riding his bicycle. We went over We were at the mountain one day, and we was coming home, some other fellows and I, we went over there to our camp, go turkey hunting. And we met him on his bicycle way on the other side of the mountain. Went down on Route 70, well, he turned down below Rochester, Route 73, over the mountain there. He was way down the other side of the mountain going on his bicycle.
Gosh, that's a long way.
Yes, but he goes out, he rides, well, if he ain't awful busy, he'll go out and ride his bicycle 7, 8, 10 miles a day. Lots of days. You know, pretty active. His wife is getting pretty well crippled up. I see her down to the store quite often. Awful nice people. You know, but he's worked like a slave and done everything he could, and he raised his family, and he had a very nice family, and he's an awful nice people, both of them. Well, his whole family were. And I've always admired him for the way he's. He really toughed it out to keep going, and he still, I guess, goes up and does a little skiing, but she isn't able to. She said the other day, she says, I put my skis up for good, she says. I'm getting crippled up so I can't hardly walk, so not about skiing.
So Mad River started before Sugarbush.
Oh yes, it was quite a number of years before Sugarbush started in. And then Sugarbush started in over what they call Sugarbush South now.
Yes.
And then a fellow by the name of Elliot opened up the
Glen Allen
up there. And my brother worked for him for quite a number of years. And he died very sudden, quite a few years ago.
Oh, is that why it got sold?
Oh, I don't know just how it did happen to get sold. Elliot, I guess, is still alive. But Sugarbush, they wanted to expand. They tried to compete with... Killington. But I don't think they ever will, because they don't have the way things are going, I don't think, my honest opinion, another 15 years, I doubt if there'll be any skiing in Vermont.
Is that right? You
That's
think it's
my
forming?
Honest opinion, because now when I was a young fella, that you, after the 1st of December, you never would see the top of a fence post. We always had 6, 7 feet of snow. Good gracious, it was clear to your neck, seems so. And the last 8 or 10 years, we don't have any snow. Hardly to speak of compared to what we used to have. I can remember one fall when we lived on Tucker Hill, that my folks and the family went up to my grandmother, kept house for a fellow way up on number 9 hill way back there, by the name of Jack Smales. And we went up there for a Thanksgiving dinner. We went the horses, a pair of double sleighs. They called them Bobby sleighs at that time. And I know that when we came home, the snow and the wind had blown so it filled the road in, we had to go up around through the neighbor's field in order to get home, down by the old Tucker place. Of course, they fixed the road all over up there now that used to be right down in a gully, and the wind would fill it right full of snow from one side to the other. And I know that that road that day was full of snow when we went home. That was, I don't know, way back in probably around 1915, 16, maybe somewhere along in there. I don't remember just what it was, but I was just a little cuss at the time of it.
Well, I know that there used to be a saying that if Thanksgiving muck will hold up a duck, the rest of the winter you'll wallow in muck.
Yep. Yeah, and I know I've heard my folks tell that if you got a snowstorm and it came in the mud, you can make up your mind that it won't go to stay long. Or and if it came on, and I don't know, but just vice versa. Now, it seems so that if it came on the ground, it froze harder in blazes, that the snow wouldn't stay. It would thaw off. But I'm not sure which way it was, but one way or the other. But I know one fall, they used to have a rigging they called a drag to drag the road with, and our road on Tucker Hill was pretty rutty. And it was getting cold, and my father took his horses, and he had the drag up to our place, because it was the end of the road. And he took that and dragged it down the road and back to the top of the big hill, and back that evening while we were starting some of the chores. And right after that, we got quite a snowstorm. And as I remember, we had plenty of snow that winter.
Well, I've always heard that I think it, after the first snow on this mountain, it's what, 6 weeks?
Yeah. Now they claim that when you see the snow on top of the mountain, it used to be, after the white snow is the top of the mountain was capped white with snow, you could figure 6 weeks later you'd have winter. But that don't mean much anymore.
And when the ponds were full, I heard
too. Yeah. But this summer was pretty dry, and I had an idea this summer that we would have all kinds of snow this winter, but we got so much rain in September and October that I'm not looking for a big snow, fall of snow this winter.
You're not.
I got two springs out back here that fed a little pond where I watered my garden with, and both those springs went dry this summer, and that's the first time they ever was real dry, so I didn't get any water from them. But now they're full again, running over.
Yeah, I also was told you were a great gardener. I forgot.
Well, I had a pretty good garden this year, but I've cut it down this fall. I've been all over the land. I had in the garden to... been all over it with my tiller, and I put winter rye on half of it, and the other half I put grass seed on it, but it didn't get on soon enough, so I may have to do it again next spring. But I'm not going to have a very big one next year. We had a good garden this year. We picked 197 and a half pounds of peas.
Sounds like a good
sold
size.
Them, got pretty good money for them.
Did you can them?
No, she canned up quite a batch of them. Enough, so I guess we'll have some this winter off and on. And I had 97 of those buttercup squash. Last year I had 128. So I had quite a good crop of cucumbers. Well, the young fellow up above here broke his leg this summer, and he had been laid up for about 8 weeks on crutches, and he loved cucumbers, so I used to take them up and give them to him, so I kept him cucumbers this summer. They're pretty good boys, both of them. They helped me a lot here after I had my heart attack.
When did you have your heart attack?
Oh, 3 years ago, and last June I had the first one. Then the 7th of August, I had another one, and they took me out in the ambulance, and I remember them working on me in the emergency room, and I remember them wheeling me into the elevator to take me up to the upper floor, and that's the last thing I remember till next day.
Gosh.
I clunked out, but they brought me back to life again. I told the doctor, you no business doing it, it was torture after death. I said, they should have left me alone. But I don't know, I had a pretty good year last year, and I've had a good year this year. So I guess maybe it was worth it. I'm looking forward now to hope that I'll be healthy enough so next fall I go down to Kentucky to our outfit's Army reunion.
Oh, that would be great.
I went to one a year ago this last September over in Syracuse, New York. And that was, I met a lot of fellows that I hadn't seen for over 40 years. But I understand that if they plan that now, they're talking of having the one in 94, they plan to have their reunion over in Normandy in France. But I told them, I guess that was one trip that I wouldn't make. I couldn't afford to go over there in the first place. I don't know if I can afford to go to the one, but if I'm alive next year, I may have to sell the half of the farm or place here. But if I'm alive and healthy, I'm going to go to it, like if I have to, one way or another.
Do you still own the farm you had here, or?
No, all I own is just an acre and 6/10 of land now. I own this whole business, this side of the road up through here. I bought it in 1947. When I first got out of the service, I bought a little place from my brother down on the river. But it wasn't big enough to run a farm and could make a living. My father was alive at the time, and he did majority of the work of farming, the chores and stuff like that, a lot of it. But I couldn't make a living at it. I had to work out most of the time to try to make a living. And my uncle was alive, and he lived with us. And then I had another brother that lived with me. Well, I had two brothers at the time of it. One of them works down at Spalding's on the farm now. And the other one worked for, went down country to Massachusetts, and he worked for the, well, the Springfield Armory. He worked in the office there. And while he was working, all of the young people around in the neighborhood had all gone into service, going into the Korean War, so he came home one day and told my sister, he lived with her down there in Massachusetts, in Springfield. And he told her, he says, well, he says, everybody else was leaving the community, she says, to go into service. And he says, I just went in and signed up this afternoon. He says, so I'll be going in a few days. So he went over to the Korean War and got back after a while. But he got killed down in Massachusetts, got hit with a car when he was 26 years old. And oh, that, our family got pretty well thinned down.
Do you have sons that, or
no, we don't have any children. No. I got my sister down in Rhode Island is alive, and I got another brother out in, well, he's over in New York now, where he was married and had a family, and he and his wife separated. But his, one of his daughters, he's got a place there in New York, and he's been there this summer looking after that, but she's gone down to Texas to, for some kind of schooling. She's a lieutenant major in the Army, Medical Corps in the Army. And so she got a pretty good job, and she bought the property and built a new house there. And he's been looking after that, but he wants to go back to Colorado. But he don't know when he's going to go. I was talking with him the other day, and he said it'd be a while before he can go yet. Got to wait till she gets back. So I guess he's going down to Massachusetts to spend Thanksgiving with his other younger daughter. Then he don't know what he will do. He said he'd like to come back over to Vermont and see me again before he goes back to Colorado. And he might make it.
Well, I must say, you live in a nice spot where you can...
Yes, it's just... Yeah, I see the overcrossed here, and now where they're cutting off all this pine over there. I've helped hay that. I was up there the other day talking with a fellow, and I told him, well, I says, where all that pine is, when I was a young kid, they helped to hay that all off one summer.
Well, the lands, I mean, it must have been much more open.
Oh, there was, yes, a lot of the farms have all grown up, and up there, up on our old hill practice. There's only one farm really up there that hasn't grown up, and that's what we used to call the Maximum Farm. But the Gaylord boys, I understand, they pasture that every summer with a bunch of their beef cattle. And they've kept it. I was up there the other day, and it's still open. The meadows are still quite open. But it's all built up to houses all over the place. And then the Irish farm up here, that's been sold. And now they've, I don't know, they're talking of building 5 new houses up here. One up just above the, where the farmhouse is on the ledges, and then over what they call the Royal Field, they want to build one back at the edge of the woods there, and then way up in the lower part of the Boyne Field was the Boyne Farm pasture. The Dead Irish set it all out to pine a number of years ago, and that's got grown up pretty good, but they want to clear it off and put 2-3 houses up there. And then the day before yesterday, I went over onto the Barnard Farm. They put a road, cut a road, and put in a new one this summer. Green Mountain Power is putting in an underground electric cable from the main road clear way back up into the woods. I don't know if I can drive up there, but way up by the Perry Jocelyn Sugar House. I drove way up there with my little rig the other day. And the Green Mountain Power said they got 9 lots up there that they've got power run to. But I heard they wanted to build 11 houses up in there.
The housing market was supposed to be flat.
Well, it is right now, but they all think, well, our president, he thinks they're going to have, it's all coming back again. But when you listen to the news on the radio and all of these people that know more about it than he does, they tell you that the economy is just about shot. They're in a, well, it's not really a depression, but it's the next thing to it. I think it's very close to the depression we had back in the early 30s.
That must have been tough here, wasn't it?
That was tough everywhere. Yep.
Did the farm economy help that?
Well, back at the time of the Depression, most of the families, they lived on a small farm. And if they worked hard enough, they carved themselves out a fairly decent living compared to what a lot of them did in the cities.
Yeah.
They didn't any of them starve to death, but because they could raise and their own food, and they raised their own meat, and things like that. Now I can remember when practically all of when I was a lister back there in Facetown, when we went around to list the property, that practically every farmer at least had one or two hogs. And of course, in the spring of the year when you went relisting, they're supposed to have their, get rid of their hogs before the 1st of April, they had to pay taxes on them. So the majority of them, they would, in March, they would butcher their hogs and take care, cure their meat and keep it. And of course, back them days in the summertime, the majority of the families, they had salt pork for meat. And they, well, everybody said they had salt pork and milk gravy, but I guess that's what most of them had because they'd take some of the pork, the frying of the grease from cooking the salt pork and put some flour in it, and they could make a nice brown gravy to put on your potatoes or whatever they had. And that's what they had most of them through the summertime for meat, was salt pork. I was up here, the Freese boys have got some hogs up here in the barn where the Irishes lived. I saw them a while ago, and they're the biggest hogs I've seen in a long time. Boy, you could get some salt pork off one of them. I think those hogs would dress over 400 pounds apiece.
Is that
they got
right?
Five of them, and there's three of them, I know it'll dress over 400 pounds apiece. I don't know whether they butchered them yet or sold them or not.
Is there anything to the, a number of people used to believe it was best to butcher on the full of the moon because the meat didn't shrink?
Well, I don't know if I've ever heard that, but I know that back years ago, everybody raised corn.
Yeah.